The House will have under consideration House Bill 216 as amended. Gentleman from 31.
Mr. Speaker, before getting started, I would ask unanimous consent that the members of the State Affairs Committee be recorded as present.
Heard the request or objection? Hearing none, the members of the State Affairs Committee will be recorded as present.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask unanimous consent that we dispense with further reading of House Bill 216 as amended.
Without objection, the gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, probably the most basic part of the reason why this country was discovered in the first place, or came into being as a nation as we have in our Constitution, one of the basic rights that we have as individuals is the right of conscience. That's a First Amendment right that we have, is specifically bestowed on us by the Constitution of the United States. Mr. Speaker, I can't imagine what would happen in our nation if we didn't have that right. We would probably revert to those things that happened prior to our country coming into existence. But that notwithstanding, we have in current law in other forms for health care providers that they are not, they do not have to perform procedures that are in violation of their conscience. Mr. Speaker, it only seems reasonable that if we extend that to doctors, hospitals, and any of those other practitioners, that we do not require this of anyone in the medical field, and thus House Bill 216 has come into play. Mr. Speaker, we have the ability to exercise our conscience in virtually everything we do in our lives. And others are prevented from coercing us to go against our conscience. It only seems reasonable that we make it absolutely clear that for pharmacists and pharmacies that this is also the case. In 1973, the then Senator Frank Church sponsored legislation in the Congress, in the U.S. Senate, that would make it possible for doctors to exercise their conscience with regard to those procedures that they thought would be in violation of their conscience. So, Mr. Speaker, this is an extension of that. It extends to those care providers in pharmacies and pharmacists that they do have the ability to exercise their conscience as well. Mr. Speaker, I suppose there'll be some discussion here today and some questions as to what this does. We did amend the bill to narrow it down in a fashion that it pertain to pharmacists, and we took the language "any person" out of that at the request of the State Affairs Committee. So, Mr. Speaker, with that, debate is open.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 7.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've heard House Bill 216 discussed as a pro-life bill. I don't think so. I really think that this, from where I stand, that this looks like an anti-life bill. This bill allows the personal opinions, the personal values of a pharmacist to impair the ability of a patient to get medication legally and ethically prescribed for them. Conscience is important, but so is the ethical responsibility to serve as given in your profession. I'm going to give you a few examples, a few clinical examples of how this might work and the consequences that the sponsor may not have foreseen. Consider an 18-year-old young woman at the pharmacy for contraceptives. The pharmacist has a religious, moral, or ethical principle that sex outside of marriage is wrong, and refuses to dispense the legally prescribed medication. There's no effort made to find another dispensing pharmacist. Most teens are not going to go from store to store to get the medication, so the doses are skipped or delayed. She gets pregnant. But there's more to the story. She's also on a medication that causes serious or even fatal fetal abnormalities. In fact, the medications like Dilantin, Accutane, or Warfarin have a black box warning from the FDA stating that women of childbearing age who take these medications need to be on effective contraception. The young lady and her family have been put in a terrible but avoidable situation, the decision about continuing the pregnancy. Imagine the stress on her principles. Or another situation, a young man with HIV who is refused antibiotics or antivirals by a druggist who feels that HIV infections are the justified wrath of God on gays. But this patient got his case while abroad from a transfusion. He stands a significant risk of getting a fatal infection. Denying him his medication is not life-affirming. Or another situation, a final case, although I bet you can even imagine others. My mother has significant dementia, but she also has heart and kidney disease and needs medications to keep her going. The pharmacist on duty believes, as did the former Governor Lamb of Colorado, that the elderly should get out of the way and not consume resources, so he refuses to dispense. I know the system enough to find another druggist, but what if it isn't Dr. John Rushi, but instead a logger in St. Mary's or a laborer in Orfino? Does the pharmacist have the right to make end-of-life decisions for my family, to not deny me or my parent legally prescribed life-sustaining medications? Should this bill become law, he does. Not only that, but he does not have a responsibility for the consequences of his decision. He is immunized by this bill. As a physician, I know what happens when the healthcare system fails and patients or family members are harmed. Lawsuits. With the pharmacist and the pharmacy immune from criminal, civil, or administrative action, the prescribing physician is the next likely target. I should have seen to the needs of my patient and sent them to a pharmacy where their prescription would have been filled. The refusing pharmacist doesn't have that requirement. House Bill 216 may have laudable intentions, but it is way too broad. I do believe it poses a threat to life and the health of our citizens and should not become law. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 33.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to rise in support of the bill. This bill goes a long ways in protecting conscience, and these areas of conscience are already prescribed in the Code of Ethics of pharmacists now, and they do already do this. This simply codifies into law what is already here and prevents encroachment and imbalance. This bill is tempered by the fact, if you look on page in the new section on line 36 through 38 on page 5, it has a provision where a pharmacist shall not discriminate based on religion, based on race, based on color, based on religion, or sex, or national origin. Please give this a green light, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
Is there further debate? Lady from 19.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to debate in opposition to the bill. Mr. Speaker, this bill is not needed. Pharmacists currently have the right to refuse. Under the American Pharmaceutical Association's Code of Ethics, they have the right to refuse, but they must refer. Again, they have the right to refuse, but they must refer. In a more urban setting, that is not a problem. In a rural setting, that can be a great problem. It's not necessary for a number of reasons. The 500-pound or the 800-pound gorilla, depending on which source you like to use, is Plan B. Plan B is a form of emergency contraception. It does not, I repeat, does not require a physician's prescription and is available behind the counter without a doctor's prescription, and it can be dispensed by the pharmacy tech or even the cashier. It does not require the pharmacist to do that. What are we doing? There is no protection here needed here. The pharmacist may not even be involved unless the person who requests the medication wants to confer with the pharmacist, which I would imagine I certainly would, but Nevertheless, they are not required to do this. I might add that this medication is available online. I went on Google last night. It's amazing what you can find on Google. You can order this Plan B, and you can get it overnight in a plain, wrapped in a plain brown wrapper. And it will come directly to your door, and you just take the two pills. And these two pills keep your body from ovulating. That's all it does. It's the same contraception that has been used for 35 years in this country. That's all it is. Let's talk just a little bit about the history of contraception in this country. In 1965, in Griswold versus Connecticut, a Connecticut law that prohibited the use of contraceptives for married people was challenged. By a vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court invalidated the law on the grounds that it violated the right to marital privacy. This was for married couples only. After that decision, it was also challenged in Eisenberg versus Baird in 1972. And in their decision, they invoked the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And with your permission, Mr. Speaker, may I read?
From what does the lady wish to read?
The Constitution of the United States.
The lady can always read from the Constitution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is from the 14th Amendment. No state shall make or enforce any law which will abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person the equal protection of the laws. So we have, first of all, the Supreme Court weighing in, and now we have the Constitution weighing in. Now let's go to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I'm going to take this from a kind of a ground level because, as you know, I am a human resource professional. I have worked in hospitals that were both Catholic, secular, government, and as a consultant have worked with hospitals across the nation that fit these descriptions, as well as retail pharmacies. It is very difficult. However, under Title VII, which covers the right to practice your religion and many other categories, such as age, race, sex, so on, religion is held very dear in this country, as you well know. Title VII covers any employer that has 15 employees or more. They may not treat employees of any religion differently. They must reasonably accommodate any employee who has a right of reasonable accommodation. And the accommodation is different for larger employees than it is for smaller. Obviously, if you are a larger employee, your ability to make a real adjustment for your employees is tougher for you than it is for a smaller employee. But nevertheless, it's there. Unless you can prove that it will be an undue hardship, Title VII will accommodate those who have a religious or moral objection. Now, the problem is that applicants must identify themselves when they come in for the interview. We had testimony in committee in which a gentleman claimed that he had been asked. Now, the only reason that an employer might ask would be because it's necessary to fill a particular shift or a particular time frame, you know, a work schedule. And they would, and there's no backup. So if somebody did not have the ability to do that, they still would not be able to discriminate, but they would have to do some schedule rearranging so that this person could indeed do that. However, keep in mind, once again, the American Pharmaceutical Association said, although they have the right to refuse, they have to refer. Title VII also, I could just tell you that as a practical standpoint, employers jump through hoops to make sure that all employees have the right to exercise their conscience. It's just part of how they work. They believe that all employees and all of its patients, and I'm talking about hospitals and pharmacies and everywhere else, believe that people should be treated with the utmost kindness, dignity, and respect, and that we should be able to exercise our autonomy. Well, let's just talk for a second about how this will impact each one of you. And I include, and those of you I cannot see upstairs, this bill would impact you as well. So I would ask for your rapt attention here for a minute as to how it could impact you. The gentleman from District 7 talked about how a pharmacist could make a decision regarding dispensing medication regarding Alzheimer's. That hits close to home for me because many of you know my father died of Alzheimer's disease. Had he not been able to take the medications that he was given to make him more comfortable, it would have been, could have been even more difficult than it already was. What if you're a male and you need Viagra and the pharmacist doesn't think that men should be able to do that? No. How would you feel about that if it were prescribed to you? What about a couple who's having difficulty, great difficulty getting pregnant and they take fertility drugs? And the pharmacist felt very strongly about that. You could be denied that. What about a diabetic who goes in to get your insulin and you find out that the pharmacist refuses because he or she belongs to an animal rights group? And insulin is animal-based and also objects to animal testing. I have no way of knowing what products, what drugs in that pharmacy have been tested on animals, but I can bet you it's a darn high percentage of them. What about people who are suffering from depression and need psychotropic drugs, postpartum depression, have schizophrenia, bipolar disease, maybe alcoholics and are taking a drug that helps them when they're going through a detox process? What about your child that your physician has prescribed Ritalin? Are you going to deprive that, let the pharmacist deny you that because he or she is a Scientologist or just doesn't believe in that? Or you're among the 1 in 5 women in the United States who take oral contraceptives. That's right, 1 in 5 women. And even pharmacists can get wounded on this thing. Today, they can refuse to dispense medication for medical reasons. For instance, a patient may be taking other drugs that would react to the new prescription. Now, generally, this is handled by a quick phone call to the physician. And for those in the hospitals, it's hospital pharmacists are just crackerjacks at figuring this out. It's a quick consultation. It's usually solved within 30 seconds. But suppose you're in a mom-pa small-town pharmacist. He's not going to be able to help you that way to get that kind of medical interaction. I certainly have had some adverse effects from medication that has been prescribed to me. And one of the biggest holes in this bill is that it excludes pharmacy technicians and the cashiers. I was just in the pharmacy, or the drugstore, I guess, actually. I went to Rite Aid on 15th on Friday afternoon to pick up a prescription that I had to get. Well, during that time, a young woman came in and needed some pseudoephedrine, which apparently can be used to make some sort of drug. My apologies for not having more information about this, but it can be. And so the cashier said, I can sell you one, but I can't sell you any more than that. And that would be true with Plan B. As long as you're 18 years old, no one can deny you. It does not require a physician's prescription. This is unnecessary legislation. It's bad legislation. It's covered in the Constitution in the 14th Amendment. It's covered, been covered by the Supreme Court. It's covered by Title VII. These drugs are readily available, and all you have to do is ask for them. They're available online, and they, as I said, they do not need to be dispensed by a pharmacist. Each Idahoan in this state should have the right to plan his or her family. This is not the state's prerogative. This is where government ends. Many of you have been talking about sovereignty. Well, I ask you, when you talk about autonomy, what is more autonomous? What is dearer to you than your family's ability to plan a family? So for all of those reasons, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to examine your moral and ethical responsibilities and vote no on this bill. It is not necessary.
Is there further debate? Lady from 18.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I ask you, what is House Bill 216 about? House Bill 216 begs the question, when can a health care professional, in this case a pharmacist, deny or delay health care to a patient? House Bill 216 is just way too broad. The American Medical Association policy says that the rights of the patient are paramount and the principle of access to Medicare for all patients and supports the requirement that a pharmacist fill any legally valid prescription or provide immediate referral without interference. House Bill 216 allows a pharmacist to not fill a legally valid prescription and does not add that you can have a referral. In fact, that was our amendments last week. The American Pharmacy Association policy says that a pharmacist must fill legally valid prescriptions, and if they can't, then they must step aside so that the patient continues to receive seamless health care. My amendments last week could have made House Bill 216 an acceptable bill by adding patient protections, like a referral to another pharmacist in a timely manner. The American Public Health Professionals policy says a pharmacist must fill a prescription in a timely manner in order to protect the public, because delayed care can mean a more severe infection and the possibility of infecting the public. This is especially important in rural Idaho communities where the nearest pharmacist may be hundreds of miles away. The St. Al's pharmacist who testified in committee said that what he would do if he felt a drug was against his conscience and he was in a rural areas, he would provide a 24-hour subscription, fill the prescription for a 24-hour period, which would allow the patient to get to another pharmacist. The health insurance companies believe that House Bill 216 will delay or deny care, and delayed or denied care may mean a more severe infection or a pregnancy, which may result in higher health care costs. So, the American Medical Association doesn't like this bill. The American Pharmacist Association doesn't like this bill. The American Public Health Professionals don't like this bill. And the health insurance companies believe it will increase their costs. So I urge you to reject this bill by giving it your red light. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Gentleman 32.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ladies and gentlemen of the House. What we heard in committee and what I've heard here today in the debate is this bill is not necessary. The pharmacists already have this right, but is that true? I guess it all depends on who you work for. I spoke with two pharmacists about House Bill 216. In the first case, the pharmacist works for a company who exists specifically to dispense medications. And this pharmacist works for a boss who is very supportive, who basically leaves the right up to the pharmacist. And in one case, this pharmacist I'm referring to actually did, about a week ago, refuse to dispense a medication to a patient who was obviously pharmacy shopping. And her employer backed her up. In the second case, the other pharmacist I know works for a large supermarket chain which has a pharmacy within its building. This pharmacist told me that her employer has told her that she can only refuse to dispense Plan B. That's it. She must dispense all other meds. And what we heard in committee, I think, backs up what we've heard here today, which is there are really no permanent protections for pharmacists. It really is up to the employer. And pharmacists could be fired for refusing to dispense medications. And that was confirmed from the second pharmacist I spoke with. She confirmed to me that if she refused to dispense any drugs beyond Plan B, her job could be in peril. So with that, I ask for your green light in support of this legislation. Thank you.
So further debate. Lady from 17.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ladies and gentlemen of the House. As you know, I am a pharmacist, and I rise in opposition to this bill. And I asked Mr. Speaker if I mightn't be able to read a letter from a pharmacist. It's also a lawyer.
Without objection, the lady may read.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This comes from Sam Hoagland, who teaches our pharmacy law class for ISU School of Pharmacy. In this section, he reads, the profession was not consulted. I am disturbed that this bill was introduced by uninvited non-pharmacists without first consulting the profession of pharmacy in Idaho. As a member of the Idaho Pharmacy Leadership Council and as immediate past president and longtime board member of ISHP, so that's the Hospital Pharmacy Association, I can tell you that this legislative proposal was certainly not brought by either of these organizations for review or discussion before it was introduced. Let's see. I attended the Board of Pharmacy meeting last month when Mr. Ripley first presented his idea to propose this legislation. He sought the advice and blessings of the Board of Pharmacy. The Board of Pharmacy took no stand on the legislation in draft form, but advised Mr. Ripley to consult the two pharmacy associations in the state, ISHP and ISPA. The pharmacy associations have had not had time to survey their members or otherwise formulate any formal positions for and against this bill. Neither am I aware that the major national pharmacy associations have been appraised of this bill. One would think that the proponents and Idaho legislature would want substantial input from the state and National Pharmacy Association before passing a bill that would presume to affect the practices of pharmacy. If the profession of pharmacy believes that this legislation is necessary and desirable, then the profession of pharmacy can and should sponsor and support this legislation. If the profession of pharmacy concludes this bill is unnecessary, then the legislation should be abandoned. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, what I've learned here in the legislature as I've watched some bills move through is that we have a process here, and when bills are mature is when they really make the best kind of policy. This bill is not mature. I think that we should hold back on this year, have a chance to get everybody that needs to be informed and able to weigh in to do that weighing in. And with that, I'll ask for your red light. Thank you.
So further debate. Gentleman from 16.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today in opposition to House Bill 216. I do agree with the gentleman from District 31 that conscience is an important right. But conscience is not our only right. And the right to receive medical care after consultation with our physicians who write necessary prescriptions is a right that should not be denied by any profession. In crafting this legislation, it was therefore important that the bill come with sufficient sideboards to protect all of the rights involved. We have heard today that the pharmacists' ethical rules do provide for conscience, but contain some important sideboards, such as referral. I also think it's important to understand that pharmacy, unlike, say, when in my generation we had the draft, compulsory military service recognized the right of conscientious objection. And in recognizing that right, I think an important consideration there was that the service was compulsory. Here, pharmacists are not compelled to become pharmacists and undertake the duties that go with an important part of the healthcare profession. which is to help physicians and other healthcare professionals protect the health of our citizens. I'd like to focus now on the employment law aspects of this bill. As many of you know, I've been an employment lawyer for some 20 years, and I think that the bill has some problems with respect to how it treats pharmacists' employers. Section 3 of the bill in subsections 1, 2, and 3 on page 5 have the effect of allowing the pharmacist to make his or her conscious decision from moment to moment without any notice to the employer or anyone else. Now imagine, if you will, a pharmacy situation, and I think we've all been involved in them, where there's only one pharmacist on duty. And they've been giving a little bit of thought over time to not filling certain prescriptions based on their conscience, and they finally come to the decision that they will not fill a particular prescription at midnight, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, because they're presented with the issue, and they say, I'm not going to do it. Now, I don't think that's the responsible way for a professional to approach an important decision like that, but this law doesn't proscribe or prohibit that in any way. There is no requirement for the pharmacist to tell his or her employer of this conscience-based decision in advance, so that the employer, whose business it is, can make the decision as to whether we want to fill these kinds of prescriptions, and do I want to administratively account for the pharmacist's objection by making another pharmacist available. For example, to include a requirement that when a pharmacist comes to that kind of decision, they must call a backup pharmacist to come in and fill the prescription if the employer so chooses. Or if the employer chooses, to require the pharmacist to refer to another pharmacy that can fill the prescription. There is no requirement in this law for referral. Even if there is another pharmacist on duty in the same pharmacy, the pharmacist can simply tell the customer, I decline, I will not fill your prescription. There is no requirement that the pharmacist even inform the customer that the prescription can be had from another pharmacist in the same store. It is only reasonable that the employer know the scope of the pharmacist's objections to dispensing medications, if there are any, as soon as possible. After all, it is the employer's business. If the employer does not share the pharmacist's conscience objections, the employer is entitled to have enough information so that it can take the administrative actions necessary to have medications dispensed. One of the big problems with this bill is that employers will need to know the religious, moral, and ethical beliefs of its pharmacists. It's going to require employers who want to fill all of the prescriptions of their customers to make the kinds of inquiries that we employment law professionals and consultants always tell employers not to make. Don't ask people about their religion. Don't ask people about their moral beliefs. Why? Because it looks like you might be discriminating, and that evidence of those questions can be used against you in court as the employer later on. So the employer here is in a box. The employer must know what ethical restrictions the employee has, but is probably going to be advised by their employment lawyers not to ask those questions. Furthermore, the employer must suffer a loss of sales income to its business if the pharmacist refuses to refer within the store or beyond. Imagine the kind of customer relations an employer earns in the community when it refuses to fill a prescription, but also refuses to refer. Section 3 of the bill, subsection 4, also contains a very curious omission. Although that section of the bill bars discrimination in the filling of prescriptions on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, and national origin, it inexplicably leaves out age and disability. The elderly and the disabled are particularly vulnerable populations in our society and deserve some measure of consideration under this bill, I think. I do not want And I, unfortunately, both of my parents are deceased, and I've gone through end-of-life decisions with both of them. There are ethical and moral dilemmas in end-of-life decisions for the elderly that I've personally experienced, and I know many of you have as well. There are many decisions where the physician says, you know, I just don't think we ought to prescribe a particular medication which might prolong the life of the individual, but at the same time may seriously compromise their quality of life. Now, every physician and every pharmacist that I have dealt with in those situations has believed it was the right of the family and the patient involved to make those kinds of balancing decisions. But if you have someone who subscribes to Governor Lamb's philosophy that the old should die and get out of the way, and that the old in the last days of life consume far too many resources, and a pharmacist subscribes to that ethical position, imagine the mischief that can be created. I had originally thought that maybe that the deletion of age and disability in subsection 4 was a mere oversight, but I'm beginning to wonder. I think all of us have questioned from time to time in our own families the amount of resources and the prolonging of the agony kinds of issues that we all face in these decisions. Are we saying that the disabled and the elderly get less protection under this law? I think that's the clear implication. We must remember that the bill's definition of conscience is so broad that it includes ethical principles. In other words, anything a pharmacist believes. So a pharmacist who believes that our elderly or our disabled are a burden can implement those principles in his or her work. I think that is wrong. It does not respect and protect life. In fact, it is just the opposite. This bill will also encourage fired or disciplined pharmacists to claim illegal discrimination on the basis of their conscience and force employers to defend an increased number of wrongful termination lawsuits, I believe. In short, the bill takes away the employer's ability to manage its own business as it sees fit. If the employer wants to fill certain prescriptions, a single employee can exercise a veto on the employer's decision with no warning whatsoever. I do not believe that that is right. I do not believe, although I think that some of the goals of this bill are laudable, I do not think that this bill has sufficient protections in it for the employer's interests, for the customer's interests, and therefore I ask that you vote no. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 29.
Mr. Speaker, would the good gentleman from District 31 stand for a question?
Will the gentleman yield?
Mr. Speaker, I'll yield. I hope I can do the job. The
gentleman yields.
Mr. Speaker, good gentleman from District 31. My question is simply, why was age and disability left out of the bill's text?
Well, Mr. Speaker, and gentleman from
29.
It was not deliberately left out by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I can't think of an instance where someone would be a pharmacist who would discriminate against someone who is aged or disabled based on conscience. I don't know what the conscience provision would be there.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask a follow-up question of the good gentleman, 31?
Will the gentleman yield further?
Gentleman yields.
The gentleman yields.
Mr. Speaker and good gentleman from 31, I believe that the good gentleman from District 16 outlined a couple of issues, and so did the good gentleman from 7. You know, if you had somebody who was dying from a condition that was incurred or they received late in their life, and that was the sort of condition that somebody had based on age, a pharmacist could say, you know, based on my conscience, my beliefs, I just don't think that we should prolong the life of somebody who doesn't have a good quality of life. Resources shouldn't be spent there. So isn't that a situation where the pharmacist could discriminate against somebody based on age?
Mr. Speaker, the short answer is no. And I also think that if we look at the opposite of this, what if a pharmacist were asked to dispense a drug that he knew was going to prematurely end the life of a disabled person or someone that's aged? Then would he be bound to dispense that in spite of his conscience? I think not, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, good gentleman from District 31. Mr. Speaker, to debate in opposition to the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's with regret that I rise to debate against this bill. I feel like I have a strong record of voting for pro-life issues, supporting pro-life issues. However, I don't feel any group or any issue should receive this body's approval just because of who they are or what the issue is. I, unlike perhaps some of my colleagues on this side of the aisle, believe that we should have a pharmacist conscience bill. I think there are some issues that are, and some beliefs that are so strongly held that we shouldn't force somebody to participate in them, and we should provide them, for example, pharmacists, the ability to carve out a right to protect their closely held belief. But we need to do this right. We need to refine the issues to which it is applied. We need to refine the manner in which it is applied. And most importantly, in my mind, we need to make sure that the rights of the business owner are balanced with the rights of the pharmacist. These rights are not mutually exclusive. They don't need to be. However, if you read the text of this bill, and if you listen to the arguments made by the good gentleman from District 16, I think that it's pretty obvious that this bill places the hand so heavily upon the rights of the pharmacist that the rights of the business owner are consumed in trying to protect the rights of the pharmacist. And I think there are just a couple of examples that make this clear, and I'm going to try to avoid repeating things that the good gentleman from District 16 mentioned, but I hope that everybody was listening to the arguments that he made in that vein. If you have somebody that works for you as a pharmacist and they exercise their rights under this bill and they start to exercise them so frequently that you are losing business left and right, and you are operating on the margins of your ability to operate as a business. You're losing profits. You've got customers who've been with you for years who are offended because the pharmacist was essentially judging, you know, their need to have depression medication or other medications that the pharmacist felt were against his or her ethics. You're going to start losing customers. Customers are going to talk to other customers. And what are you going to be able to do about that? Under this bill, arguably, you can do nothing. You cannot stop that individual from exercising their rights. You couldn't even put sideboards on it and say, you can do this if you do X, Y, and Z, because in order to exercise those sorts of restrictions, you may open yourself up for to litigation by that employee. And most importantly, in order for you to help the pharmacist exercise their rights and be able to protect your business, you are going to want to ask some questions about their religious beliefs and their ethical beliefs. But in doing so, you have just opened yourself up once again for accusations of discrimination. And if that pharmacist fails other standards that you have, unrelated to their exercise of religious or conscience issues, if they fail other standards, maybe they don't show up to work on time. Maybe they do a poor job of managing the pharmacy techs, and you use that as a basis for terminating their employment. I can almost guarantee you that pharmacist is going to say, no, it wasn't about those issues. It was about me exercising my conscience rights. I think this could be a good bill. The bill we have before us is not. We need to have sideboards on it. I would ask you to vote against the bill. Let's do this right, and let's make sure that we provide pharmacists the right to object based on their conscience. But let's do it in a way that allows business owners to also protect their own interests. I think that would be a good bill, and I hope you'll vote no with me on this bill. Thank you.
Is there further debate? For what purpose? Lady from two.
I'd like to stand to debate for a second time. Oh, two. Thank you.
Lady from two.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to my pharmacist, who owns three drug stores in the Silver Valley, there is more to it than just simply birth control. He had to purchase $3,500 worth of a new oral cancer medication. There were 38 pills in that. Only 8 were used, and he was only reimbursed $100 for each one. Therefore, it really did hurt his little business. He's in a county with one of the highest unemployment rates in this state and could not afford it, and said that will probably, the rest of them, will probably sit on his counter for the next 20 years. Therefore, I support this bill, according to him. Thank you.
Is there further debate?
Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman from 21.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to debate in behalf of the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, it's rather a perplexing debate. I've heard arguments in saying that this is not necessary because it's already all provided for constitutionally and via the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I'm a little perplexed because on one hand I've heard debate saying this will not make any difference. On the other hand, I've heard debate on how disastrous this would be depending on your interpretation. The fact of the matter is there is still a compulsion to refer, and Mr. Speaker, I'd ask unanimous consent to read from the American Pharmacists Association Code of Ethics for Pharmacists.
Without objection, the gentleman may read.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and ladies and gentlemen, Section 4 says a pharmacist has a duty to tell the truth and to act with conviction of conscience. Section 6, when appropriate, a pharmacist asks for the consultation of a colleague or other health professional or refers the patient. A pharmacist acknowledges that colleagues and other health professionals may differ in the beliefs and values they apply to the care of the patient. Ladies and gentlemen, I see this as a general analogy to what we provide for our hospitals and medical professionals in regards to codifying in code and avoiding frivolous. We also have rural doctors, and if you look at the provisions for a medical professional currently, you're facing the same situation, which has been dealt with. We have managed. We do not hear issues come up in that light. And we also heard some debate that talked about overnight availability via the internet or via mail in these rural settings. So some of the arguments in my mind have been circular in regards to what the implications are for this proposal. And I think that this is very important to have this in code and to protect our pharmacists and pharmacies. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I would ask for your support on this proposal.
So further debate. For the first time, lady from 17 for the second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to address a couple of points here. We've heard this mentioned from our previous gentleman that this statement about it being unnecessary. It is, in fact, unnecessary. Pharmacists have the ability to refuse to fill medications for various and sundry reasons, and our code of ethics do guide us on that. The other point is this idea about it being bad for business. I also want to bring out the point that it is very clear to me that it is bad for the profession of pharmacy, and with permission from the speaker, I think probably the best is if I read a couple lines from a letter that I received from a pharmacist.
Without objection, lady may read.
Thank you. This comes from a pharmacist that also is a professor at University of Washington, and he says, as professor, I teach University of Washington pharmacy students about the ethical obligations of our profession and urge them not to judge patients but to meet their needs. This is not merely my opinion, but one of the highest ethical demands of our profession. He talks about the code of ethics in this letter, but let me just move right down to this next sentence. If these ethical requirements are untethered from our profession and the public views pharmacists as inaccessible, unpredictable, and free from liability for our professional actions, our role in the health care field is compromised. Exempting pharmacists from liability for our actions degrades our professional role and implies that we are nothing but automatons. So, you know, the thing is that the practice of pharmacy really requires that we be fully on and consider the medication in front of us, the effect on that patient. And really, first and foremost, is that we consider that therapy for a patient that's been agreed to between that patient and the doctor. Oftentimes, we don't know what's going on there. And, you know, that's where it falls back in terms of the kind of decisions that we need to make. And, you know, this bill really makes things much more complicated for us in a world that's already too complicated. Thank you. With this, I would ask your no vote.
So further debate for the second time. Gentleman from seven.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just one short point on physicians ethics and physician rules, which have been referred to by several members. Was mentioned that this bill would give pharmacists the conscious protections available to physicians. Physicians have not only an ethical but a statutory requirement, 54.18.14, paragraph 15, on abandonment. It's grounds for medical discipline. The physician must assure that the patient is transferred for treatments when he or she is unable or unwilling to deliver those needed treatments. I think that we should require the same of pharmacists.
Further debate for the second time. Hearing none. Good gentleman from 31 care to close.
Mr. Speaker, vigorous debate this morning. But interestingly enough, I think probably as with any piece of legislation or any law on the books, you can read about anything into this you'd like. Depends a little bit on your perspective, I suppose. But let me just bring up a few points that were mentioned. Contraceptives, believe it or not, are so widely available that it is not something that even needs to be considered in conjunction with this piece of legislation. They're available everywhere, even from doctors and from Planned Parenthood. And there are plenty of pharmacies who will dispense. We've heard here today that this legislation is too broad. We've heard that it's too narrow. But I would say to you that it does. How do we make it narrow, more narrow, if we are going to limit the conscience in one area and provide conscience in another area? Who are we to say that an individual should have their conscience apply for one thing and not for another? We've heard here that this piece of legislation is not needed. Well, Mr. Speaker, what if we were discussing the opposite, that we were compelling pharmacists to dispense, regardless of their conscience? And that, of course, is the problem here, is that if we don't take some action, we could see a situation where pharmacists would be compelled to dispense. On that issue, in the state of Washington, the Board of Pharmacy promulgated a rule that said that a pharmacist had to dispense certain kinds of medications. It went to court. An injunction was placed in place. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is not known for its conservative views by any means, upheld the injunction, prohibiting that rule to stay in effect. So, Mr. Speaker, there is precedence for this. Name me the pharmacist that will not dispense insulin. I can't think of one. Name me the pharmacist that would not be willing to provide drugs for the elderly and for those who have dementia or Alzheimer's. I don't think there are any. I would submit that if there's someone who, because of their religious beliefs, does not believe in certain medications or any medications, regardless of their origin or what they're made of, I would submit that they are not pharmacists. They are not out there. Readily available is the key word here. Many medications are available readily. This House Bill 216, as amended, does not prohibit in any way referral. All groups are opposed to this. Certainly hasn't been the case so far in the discussion. We have had groups come before the committee that said that they were neutral, but if there were groups that were opposed to this, they certainly didn't make themselves manifest. Mr. Speaker, this is good legislation. The right of exercise of our conscience is one of our most basic and fundamental rights. I would suggest that we vote yes on this bill.
Debate is closed. Question is, shall House Bill 216 as amended pass? The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will record their votes. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Does any member wish to change the vote? The clerk will lock the machine and record the roll. Roll call shows 48 aye, 21 nay, one absent and excused. A majority having voted in the affirmative, House Bill 216 is amended as passed the House. Is there a correction to title? Hearing none, the title is approved and the bill will be transmitted to the Senate.